And welcome to another Sunday night edition of BAMS Radio. We are going to be talking some transfer portal for the Alabama Crimson Tide. More Michigan discussion. We're going to keep peeling back the onion, particularly as it relates to some of Michigan's top-end talent either declaring for the NFL draft or straight opting out of the bowl, in some cases both. But as longtime listeners will realize, I am not Drew DeArmond. Drew is a little under the weather right now. He's had some head cold stuff and his voice is shot. So he's taken a week. He's taken a lap. So you just have me, Thomas Watts, producer extraordinaire. Some call me the wizard. I just make things happen. And I'm joined by our good friend, former player from, 89 to 92, William Redfish Barger. Fish, how you doing this afternoon, my friend?
Good, Thomas. Just don't give me your head cold over the phone.
I will try to do. You know, here's the thing. That means more hot toddies if you're of a certain persuasion. But you know, let's start focusing on the Alabama football team, because we said with our last episode that there would be some transfer portalings. There would be. I frankly thought there were some opt outs, and that might be the biggest story of the past week in Crimson Tide land. But Alabama did see some folks decide to leave via the transfer portal. You know, you have your Danny Lewis's and your Dylan Lonergan's, but the most recent two were ones that were contributors, particularly this past year, in Devontae Smith and Justice Haynes. Fish, what's your reaction to these players deciding to move on?
Well, I mean, I think the last two that you mentioned, you know, at least through the end of the regular season of 2024, you know, what would be perceived as the two biggest losses, you know, what running back 1B and maybe safety 1B, maybe 1C, depending on a healthy Keon Saab. You know, it's of all the guys, I mean, you know, I think the one that, you know, might have been the bigger shock to me. You know, I think the rumblings have been out there for, you know, guys like Caleb Odom and Justice Hayes, you know, being disgruntled during the season. But, you know, the Dylan Lonergan departure, I think, just in, you know, my own opinion, is the one that kind of caught me by surprise. You know, lots of people think that, you know, he was going to, you know, have a legitimate shot at being, you know, QB1 this year. And, you know, maybe at least he took it till after spring practice before he made a decision on, you know, going elsewhere. I do think, based on, you know, what happened this year at Pitt with Eli Holstein, you know, he probably got a nice check to end up wherever he does end up. You know, I think we've talked about it on the show before that, you know, most of the time, you know, when you see a said player, you know, hit the transfer portal, the destination may not be publicly known already, but in most cases it is. And, you know, we'll just glaze right on over the tampering stuff. I mean, there's ways to go about this with agents and family members. I mean, let's don't kid ourselves. There's direct contact with the players, if we're just being honest. But, you know, and I think Haynes and you know, at least as far as the next game, you know, against Michigan, you know, Haynes and Smith are the two that, you know, I think kind of jump off the page at you. But, you know, we knew, you know, going into, you know, post-Iron Bowl land that Kalen DeBoer was, you know, expecting lots of departures, and it was going to be an active, you know, outgoing and incoming portal season for Alabama. They've had multiple players that have hit the portal at other schools in since midweek on visits. So, you know, I don't think a lot of this stuff is really unexpected. And, you know, as Alabama fans, I mean, I think really the only way you can look at it is, you know, nobody was expecting to see Dylan Lonergan play you know, against Michigan, but, you know, you'll probably get to see some different names at running back. You'll get to see some different names at safety. And that's really about the extent of it, as far as the guys that have departed Alabama or made their intentions known that they're departing Alabama. So, you know, other than the guys like, you know, Devontae Lawson that, you know, and Keon Saab, you know, that we knew were, you know, gone for the season. I mean, I don't expect Jalen Hale to play against Michigan, although it does seem to be, you know, close to being 100%. You know, I think he's probably going to practice some during bowl prep. But I doubt they'll, you know, put him in the game. So, you know, I mean, nothing really this week, Thomas, that's happened, you know, is really surprised me much. Maybe outside of, you know, Lonergan leaving a little sooner than I thought he would. So, you know, it's kind of, you know, rock on. You know, they're, you know, recruiting the 2026 class now, along with bringing some of these portal guys in for visits and making their decisions on those guys. But, you know, the focus right now is, you know, Kalen DeBoer picking up that 10th win. You know, in a couple of weeks, I'm not real happy about the 11 a.m. kickoff on New Year's Eve. But, you know, I think that's the focus of the program is, you know, getting that 11th win and, you know, going into the offseason, you know, with some momentum and also, you know, continuing to, you know, build that 2026 recruiting class and, you know, maybe sniffing around and seeing if there's some, you know, portal guys that they want to add and, you know, maybe a, you know, a 2025 recruit or two that, you know, maybe they circle back to and bring in if it's the right guy.
I gotcha. And, you know, let's actually talk about some of the ReliaQuest Bowl stuff. That's going to be a big part of this. To me, one of the biggest surprises thus far, you know, with exceptions of players choosing to leave via the transfer portal, there have been no opt-outs for Alabama. Even the Jalen Milroes of the world or the Tyler Bookers of the world, the guys that, frankly, I think everybody expected to move on somewhere, whether in Booker's case to the NFL or Jalen Milroe either to the NFL or to a different school because he would be, thank you for your service, please go away. But that to me has been a really big surprise. And, you know, I think there are some fans that want to say the culture of the program is strong. I'm not willing to go quite that far. But it was a pleasant surprise, at least in Booker's case so far. I have to admit some disappointment because I wanted to see what the quarterbacks could do, particularly as Michigan has started to suffer their series of opt-outs, which we're going to talk about later. But, you know, Fish, you were in a locker room at Alabama. What's your read on everybody, again, minus transfer portal folks? What's your read on the Alabama football team playing, you know, essentially everybody playing in the game, the ReliaQuest Bowl game against Michigan? What is that a surprise to you? Like, what does that say about this locker room?
No, it's not a surprise, Thomas. I would have been, you know, more surprised in the opposite direction if there had been, you know, especially some of the names that you mentioned, you know, you know, if you're a captain or if you're perceived to be a, you know, a team leader, you know, like a Tyler Booker, and you know, I think that young man has, you know, kind of exemplified the kind of people that you want in your locker room to build a culture. You know, I think he's been one of those guys, you know, since the day he stepped on campus. And, you know, that's one of the benefits, albeit they always do seem to have, you know, really, really good football players on an annual basis at IMG Academy. You know, I think, you know, at a, you know, let's just call it what it is, a high school football factory, you know, I think that's one of the benefits for a kid to go there, and spend the last two or, you know, sometimes 1 year of their high school careers is they run that place like a college program, from the schedule to how, you know, they conduct practices to their culture. And so Booker doesn't surprise me. And to be honest with you, I think any of the guys that are the, you know, the permanent team captains, you know, whether it's the Nick Saban era, the Kalen DeBoer era, or, you know, the Mike Shula era, you know, being voted a permanent team captain at the University of Alabama and having your footprint, your handprint, you know, put over there at Denny Chimes, I mean, that comes with, you know, albeit a great honor, but it's also a great responsibility. And you know, you're, you know, kind of the face of the program for, you know, that particular year, even though now you see, you know, sometimes multi-year, you know, permanent captains. So, I'm really not surprised about it. I mean, you know, every team in every locker room has their chemistry and, you know, relationship issues that they have to, you know, maybe as simple as, you know, one player dating another player's ex-girlfriend, you know, sometimes those things pop up. But I'm not really surprised by it. I think, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, chatter, you know, from day one of the DeBoer era that the culture's so different from what it was under Nick Saban. You know, some fans, you know, expressed some displeasure with that. But, you know, you just have to look at it as, you know, whether you've broken up in a relationship before, or, you know, moved from one job to the other. You know, things change and relationships change and circumstances change. So I'm not really surprised about it, but I'm happy for it, because, you know, I think that, you know, even though this season didn't turn out the way that Kalen DeBoer and some of these captains and players, you know, thought it would, I never expected, you know, two guys like Tyler Booker or Jihad Campbell to be potential opt-outs just because of where they played their high school football, how they've conducted themselves, you know, since, you know, and Jihad Campbell's, you know, and Tyler Booker, you know, they're still playing for money. You know, they've got a chance to improve their draft status, you know, especially in Campbell's case. You know, he's only got 1 year, you know, under his belt and his, you know, film library of being a starter. And so, you know, I think this is something that, you know, and I'm sure they both have good agents that are advising them. You know, this is something that they probably needed to do for the NFL draft, is just, you know, to put some more, you know, tape down, more so for Campbell than Booker. But I just think Tyler Booker's, you know, the kind of guy that, you know, when he says he's going to do something, he's going to do it till the very end. He's not going to take the easy way out. He's certainly not going to do anything that would be perceived as, you know, letting his teammates down, because I think it would let himself down. So, you know, despite all the stuff that you hear, you know, internet rumors, social media rumblings, you know, Tyler Booker is not a guy that's going to, you know, take a shortcut or the easy way out of a uncomfortable situation. He didn't get to where he is as a player. And you know, I think he's a guy that's got a really bright future on Sundays because of his, you know, versatility, you know, at the NFL level. I think he can, you know, obviously I think he's, you know, better suited to being an interior guy, but I think he could, you know, in today's game where, you know, pro teams can't carry as many linemen as they used to, he's certainly a guy that can be cross-trained at the NFL level and, you know, be effective and you know, be a guy that could maybe play right tackle if you got into an emergency situation. And that's become a big thing, you know, just because of the, you know, the low numbers. You know, most NFL teams can only afford to have 7 or 8 offensive linemen on their active rosters these days. Obviously, they've got guys they can pull up from the practice squad, but those guys are on the practice squad for a reason. So, You know, I'm happy about it. I think it gives Alabama the best chance of winning this game against Michigan. And, you know, they're going to be going up against a team, you know, that had a, you know, an up and down year. Certainly one of the, you know, I think biggest backslides. And, you know, it's to be expected, I think, with the departure of Jim Harbaugh and a lot of those Michigan players that Alabama lost to last year in the opening round of the playoffs. But, you know, you're seeing, you know, an issue for Michigan that I think a lot of people thought Alabama might face, but it just isn't going to happen. And, you know, those opt-outs, those injuries, you know, that Michigan is coming into this game with could weigh heavily on the outcome of the game.
Absolutely. And for fans that keep listening to our show, and we very much appreciate it, we're going to keep talking about Michigan throughout just as the situation develops. And even what we might hear or what we might see from the Kalen DeBoers and players of the world as media availability happens once the team gets on site. But talking about Michigan, the backslide, as you say, William, is very heavily tied to the fact that it was a heavily senior-led team last year. Like one of the oldest teams in college football. And to their eternal credit, they went undefeated and won the national championship with that crew. So now, though, the last vestiges of that talent are really moving on. And earlier Sunday, Donovan Edwards, the running back, I believe is one of the cover athletes for College Football 25, he opted out and turned pro. There have been two other draft declarations in Mason Graham and Will Johnson. Those are both high round draft picks. Now, in Will Johnson's case, he's been battling injuries, so it's assumed that he won't play. Mason Graham hasn't actually clarified his status. He has declared, but he hasn't opted out, so keep an eye on that. But one of the guys that drove Alabama crazy last year in Colston Loveland, a tight end that was, you know, kind of a gadget player, or not a gadget player, that's not fair, a do-everything player for Michigan in terms of ability, has been dealing with an injury, and he's thought to not play. So you're really starting to look at the very top end of the Michigan talent pool, and again, this is a team that barely above 500, but the very top end of the Michigan talent pool is getting depleted. And particularly when we're talking about Will Johnson and Mason Graham, and should Kenneth Grant, the other interior defensive tackle for the Michigan Wolverines, choose to opt out, which he's another projected high-round pick, you're basically blowing the back out of the interior line of the interior defensive line of the Michigan defense. And the thing that the Michigan Wolverines were able to do when they were best was at least force a team to play them tight. You know, you might only beat Michigan, with the notable exception of Texas, but you might only beat Michigan by a touchdown, and they're going to make you earn every yard of it. Now, the offense is going to get sat on because the Michigan offense has been an atrocity. Spoiler alert, I think Redfish might have played for a coach that had a better offense than the Michigan offense this year. It's been that bad. It's been rough. Let's just say it's been rough. But go ahead.
Well, you know, Thomas, it's really interesting to, you know, go back and look at, you know, when the two teams, you know, walked off the field last year, you know, after the playoff game, Michigan won, went on to win the national championship, and, you know, Alabama didn't. And then, you know, a few weeks later, Nick Saban decided to retire. You know, it's really kind of interesting that, you know, had Greg Byrne not acted as quickly as he did, you know, with, you know, hiring Kalen DeBoer, he very well could have ended up the replacement for Jim Harbaugh at Michigan. And so that's just, you know, kind of crazy how the you know, the college football world is that intertwined. But, you know, I mean, look, they've already got their marquee player on offense, you know, hobbled the tight end Loveland, and really their offense has been handicapped by quarterback play or lack thereof, and so that they've kind of that's where the backslide was I think the most heavily after the national championship season. They kind of had a turnstile there at quarterback throughout the most of the year. And it's probably also why they just went out and spent $10.5 million on Bryce Underwood. I think they kind of got a taste of, what it's like to not have a quarterback. Now, I would imagine for that kind of money, maybe they're thinking Bryce Young's going to be, their QB1. I can only imagine getting paid that kind of money to not be QB1. That'd be a great way to go through your first year of college, but and not have the pressure on you. But Loveland is if he's not able to go, I mean, that's going to really make Kane Womack's job that much easier. But for some reason, if Mason Graham, is hurt or decides to opt out, that's a betting line changing announcement right there, because he was so problematic for Alabama's offensive line last year, and he's been that way for most offensive lines that he's faced in the last two seasons. The rest of the guys, maybe Edwards is going to make an impact not being available at running back for them, but it's kind of hard to, I almost feel like we're piling on Michigan a little bit, but, it was an interesting coaching hire, to go from, a guy like Jim Harbaugh, who, with what he's been able to do in year one at San Diego, I think he had a lot of pressure on him, in the middle tour, until the last couple of years when he was the head coach at Michigan, not getting over that hump against Ohio State for a while. And now that, ball is turned and is starting to blacken for Ryan Day on the other side of that stick, you go out and spend, what was rumored to be $20 million on a roster, and, you don't even beat your, traditional rival. And, we'll see what happens with them. In the playoffs, but certainly I think a lot of the air was let out of that program, not just for this season, but I think the way this season went for, you got to give, kudos to, the former Alabama center, Seth McLaughlin, despite tearing his Achilles tendon, winning the Remington Award, that's a great honor for him, and certainly, great young man. He's been a, in both communities in Tuscaloosa and Columbus, he's always real, quick to serve in the community and help others that aren't as fortunate as he is. But, this Michigan game is bowl prep continues, with some of these guys that are already injured, and, with the news of Donovan, Edwards opted out. I think they lost their punter too. So, a not real dynamic Michigan, 2024 team is, kind of starting to get the bones picked by the vultures, so to speak, the deeper we get into this bowl prep.
You're absolutely right. And let's actually put some stats behind what we're talking about here. The Michigan defense is – honestly, they're an elite rush-stopping unit. They're top five in the country in raw statistics. Their passing ability, the ability to defend the pass drops off a little bit, but, it's still a top 35 unit, particularly if you opponent adjust. It's in the – okay, full disclosure. It's 61st in raw stats. If you opponent adjust, it's a top 35 unit. So, they've played good passing games and done pretty well against them. But, if you're an Alabama fan, you hear the run defense and you get nervous because You know, Jalen Milroe is playing, and we know what that means. Alabama's going to be a run-first team. Now, as good as the defense has looked, and this is the defense that's going full bore. You know, everybody that's available plays, essentially. Not with the opt-outs like what Fish and I have been discussing. As good as the defense is, the offense has been rough. Michigan's a decent rushing team. There were games where Alex Orji, the quarterback that I think he's gone to the transfer portal too, he was a triple, like he basically was a gadget guy. Michigan could never settle on a quarterback. Orji basically became a triple option guy. Michigan ran a version of the Army Navy spread that we watched yesterday, essentially, was what they were boiled down to. And to give voice to how rough their passing statistics are, Michigan's dead last in passing yards per attempt at 134. They're 129th at passing yards per game, and they're 126th in total yards per game. So even with a decent rushing attack, they're barely able to do anything decent and coherent as an offense. So, you know, the Michigan offense desperately needs a talent infusion, and instead of an infusion, which is probably coming with this Bryce Underwood quarterback that Michigan just went out and bought, that hasn't happened yet. So what was a rough offense is losing, you know, again, Donovan Edwards, good running back, Colston Loveland, great tight end. What else happens over the next week? I don't know. But, you know, Redfish, the Alabama line is Bama by 10. I don't see, looking at this, how that line doesn't expand, because I honestly think what we thought was going to happen with Alabama versus Oklahoma, a barely functional offense gets sat on by a good defense, and the Alabama offense just starts swinging away and eventually breaks through. That's how I project this game. But, you know, what are your early thoughts on that, given the opt-outs? How has this changed in your mind?
Well, you know, if you look at Michigan's schedule for this season, and, you know, that's the thing that really jumps off the page just at first glance, is, you know, if you look at their losses, I would imagine the margin of points scored is somewhere between 14 and 20. I seriously doubt it's north of that. You know, they, you know, just couldn't keep pace or, you know, generate points, you know, against teams like Oregon. You know, Texas ran away from them in the second half. You know, then you've got a clunker, you know, I would say probably the equivalent of, you know, Alabama's game against Oklahoma, where they just, I think, only scored a touchdown against Illinois. So, you know, I think that's the thing about this game that really jumps off the page, is, you know, their inability to score points, you know, when they were, you know, at whatever their full speed was for 2024, you know, the quarterback play was still that issue. But, you know, even with Edwards and Loveland, you know, on the field, they just couldn't generate points. And I'm sure it was I watched several games, but I'm sure most of them were, you know, the defense probably just got worn out. And, you know, kind of like similar stuff to what you saw against, you know, Oklahoma for Alabama. You know, the three and outs by the offense and turnovers and, you know, that kind of stuff. Just, you know, after a while, that takes a toll on a defense. And I do think Michigan's defense wasn't, you know, what it was, you know, for their national championship run, but it was still a solid defense. You know, they just kind of had the, you know, the inept offense, at least as far as putting points on the board. And, you know, so I think that, you know, this really does, like, I agree with you, you know, the closer this thing gets to December 31st, you probably will see quite a bit of line movement. I mean, I don't think it's going to go from 10 to 17. But, you know, you might see it creep up around the 13, 14, you know, point margin that Alabama's favored by. And you know, it makes sense if you look at the, you know, the level of competition that Alabama played this year versus, you know, what Michigan was able to do, you know, against the few good teams that they did play. You know, they struggled mightily. So, you know, this matchup, I think, is, you know, the Michigan fans, you know, are still, you know, hopeful for a win, but I think they've kind of moved on to basketball season, and, you know, are they going to, you know, be able to seal the deal and steal Alabama's five-star, you know, offensive tackle commitment, Ty Haywood, to go along with Bryce Underwood, to, you know, bolster their recruiting class. But you just don't see, you know, this is a traditional, you know, college football blue blood matchup, you know, and, you know, this matchup went, you know, decades, you know, I think the first real matchup, I think, was either my junior or senior year of high school. They played in Florida, I think, in one of the bowl games there. Michigan won that one. And then you had the, you know, the Tom Brady game. And, you know, then, you know, you had some regular season, you know, matchups there. Where,
yeah, the kickoff classic. Yeah, Jerry World, yeah, kickoff classic thing where Alabama
the Jerry World game. Yes, yes. And so, you know, this isn't a game that college football fans have gotten to see this matchup very often. But, you know, I think it's kind of lost a little bit of that blue blood luster with the, you know, the stuff that's going on up in Ann Arbor. And so, you know, we'll just have to wait and see. I mean, I know I'm looking forward to it, other than the kickoff time. But, you know, I think Alabama just kind of has to, you know, focus on what they can control. You know, they can't control who's going to be healthy for Michigan, who's going to opt out. And, you know, they really need to, you know, take care of business and, you know, get Kalen DeBoer his 10th win of his inaugural year as the head coach at Alabama and, you know, kind of take a little small amount of momentum. You know, I know the, you know, missing the first college football, you know, playoffs, you know, is kind of got a bad taste in everybody's mouth. And, you know, I think this would at least help, you know, tamp some of that down just a little bit if they can get this win and, you know, go into January and you know, start the offseason program and, you know, get ready for 2025.
Absolutely. And I think more than anything, you are completely correct. One of the things that jumps out to me is, you know, Michigan's run defense is elite, but if they're not able to contain the Alabama rushing game, and make no mistake, what they did last year in the Rose Bowl, schematically, you'll probably be seeing that again. But
oh yeah,
I mean it's not a Kevin Minter led unit, but still, the thing is, more than anything, if that run defense is not as good statistically because of opt-outs and Alabama's able to establish the run game early, Michigan's path to victory relies on ball bounce stuff like Jalen Milroe throws four interceptions or something like that. And that just isn't a high priority thing, a high probability thing, excuse me. So to me, the Michigan path to victory in this game is very thin. Now, that said, the Vanderbilt path to victory over Alabama was very thin, and to their eternal credit, they went and walked it. Oklahoma's, very similar. You know, very, very slim margins, but they hit the margins, and you had what looks like a blowout happen. But still, you know, if one or two things goes differently in that game, it's, you know, if you tell me that Alabama gets that touchdown from Ryan Williams 24-10 and gets a little spark of momentum, I think the game's going down to the end of the fourth quarter. But, you know, it didn't. Not playing revisionist history. The point of both of those games is there were thin paths to victory. Both of those teams were able to march down them and beat Alabama. I look at Michigan in a similar way. They're going to have that run defense show up. If it doesn't, and Alabama is able to do the stuff that they've been doing throughout the year when the offense has been working, it's game over. I mean, Alabama will run all over Michigan, and we will get to see some Ty Simpson time. But if that run defense shows up, you know, you're talking 17-13 kind of game at the top end, which I believe is actually which would be under in this game. But, you know, Redfish, we have plenty of time to dig into the minutiae of it because I'll be honest, I haven't looked at a shred of Michigan tape in this postseason. I've been gearing up for the fantasy football playoffs because, you know, I'm one of those people. And my team is doing well for those that care, which why would you? But, you know, that's pretty much it for football. I do want to give a quick shout out to the Alabama basketball team. Finally got over the hump against Creighton in Coleman Coliseum this past weekend. Alabama had a brutal early season stretch, dropped a couple of games, and the SEC is going to be no slouch throughout this regular season. We're going to be keeping talking about that too, and we'll see how the Alabama basketball team looks. It would be a banner year for Alabama, and it still might be. The problem is, if you look at it, Auburn's number two and, what, Tennessee is one? I don't look at the AP very often. So, you know, Alabama, through no fault of their own, is playing like third fiddle because of how good the SEC has been so far. But Redfish, that's it for me. Why don't I take us on out of here? But I really appreciate you taking the time this afternoon, sir.
Yeah, just, you know, I mean, my final thought, and I really hadn't even, you know, thought about discussing this, but you brought the Oklahoma game up so many times, it just jarred my memory. You know, it's just, this is the world that we live in now as college football fans, that the architect of that win at quarterback for Oklahoma, what, a month ago, is now going to be fighting for the starting quarterback job at Auburn in the spring.
Yeah, that is... It's going to be interesting. You know, we'll talk more Auburn because that team is.
And also too, with their, you know, QB portal departure last night in Walker White, you know, it looks like they're probably going to have to take two portal quarterbacks. And what does, you know, I'm not trying to turn this into a, you know, an Auburn conspiracy show, but, you know, it's interesting to me, you know, do you roll the dice and, you know, go into, you know, the 2025 season with, you know, a guy that's kind of had mixed reviews, you know, in Jackson Arnold. You know, they almost have to take another portal QB, you know, just to, you know, avoid getting into a really bad situation if injuries, you know, creep up in that QB room. But it's just going to be interesting to see, you know, they signed a, you know, borderline five-star quarterback in Deuce Knight. I don't know if he's an early enrollee or not and whether or not he'll go through spring practice. But, man, you know, bringing in three brand-new quarterbacks, one high schooler two portal guys. I mean, that would be a difficult room to manage, in my opinion. But, you know, the first time I manage a quarterback room will be the first time.
Right. And Auburn's going to be an interesting team just, you know, in this upcoming year. We don't know what the team looks like. I was not of the opinion that Auburn was one quarterback away, but I think with Jackson Arnold, if you can get the best version of Arnold, they could be a dangerous team. But at the same time, it's kind of like Alabama. Do I think Alabama's going to be really good next year? Yeah, I do. I think that Kalen DeBoer is going to be able to get his guys in and do the things he needs to do to let Alabama have success. But one, Alabama's schedule might, on paper right now, is actually harder next year than last year, if you ask me. And it's not like the SEC.
But at least it's at home, though.
Oh yeah. But you know, Auburn's not going to have an easy go of it. So what the SEC
and
looks
and they
like.
Better, and they better save some portal money to I'll look at it like this because I really don't know what they have waiting in the wings. My
sure.
suspicion is it's not that great, or they would have put some of these guys on the field this year along the offensive line. But they might want to save quite a bit of money for the portal so they can buy two or three offensive linemen to go along with these quarterbacks.
That's fair, and we'll see. But it's not like either schedule is going to do Alabama or Auburn any favors. So welcome to the new normal. The SEC is going to end up chewing itself to pieces 9 times out of 10 just because of how much talent and skill there is throughout the league up and down. I mean, really, if you think about it, the only disappointment was a Mississippi State team that I'm not going to absolutely kill Jeff Lebby with this, because what's his name, who they hired after Mike Leach passed away, did not do very much to help Mississippi State. But, you know, if they even take a half a step forward next year, the league is going to be insane. So,
yeah,
you know, it'll be an interesting thing to keep an eye on the off season. But that's it for this episode of Bams Radio. We will be keeping on keeping on in terms of recording shows, talking through things. We might be a little bit delayed next week because I've got a really busy recording time. But we're going to keep talking, keeping our ear to the ground. Maybe Alabama starts adding a few more folks from the transfer portal, or a few more people get gently pushed out the door. We'll see. But that's it for this episode of Bams Radio. So for William Redfish Barger and Drew DeArmond, get better, my friend. We look forward to talking to you again. That's it for this episode. Good night and roll tide.